Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all levels of professional baseball to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, the Tool Shed podcast has you covered with rankings, player analysis, and in-depth discussion. And now, here's your host, Eric Cross.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed podcast, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 418. Thank you for joining me. I'm your host, Eric Cross. You can find me on Twitter at EricCrossMLB, and the show is at ToolShedPod. Hope everyone is enjoying the postseason so far. When you're listening to this on Friday, World Series starts tonight. We got Dodgers. We got Blue Jays. Kind of like a David versus a Goliath of sorts. You know, I think the easy call is Dodgers in this series, but I think it's going to be a fun one. I want to see if the spunky Blue Jays and Vladdy and Ernie Clement and, you know, Dalton Varsho and rookie Treya Savage can kind of hold off the, you know, big bad Dodgers. It's going to be an uphill battle, but should be a fun one. Just glad to have a really exciting World Series. A lot of fun players, a lot of, you know, great players in this series. So it should be a fun World Series. My prediction, Dodgers in five. I'll go who for the MVP. I'll go old reliable. I'll go Freddie Freeman gets the World Series MVP here. But we're looking at rookies today on this episode, specifically infield rookies. It's going to be a little three-part series here the next three episodes. Rookie review for 2025, but there's so many rookies. At first, I thought I'd be doing hitters and pitchers, but even that wasn't enough of a breakdown to just really talk about all the good players, all good and the bad, you know, all the notable players, I should say. So I had to divide it up into three episodes: infielders today, outfielders next episode, and then pitchers in a third episode. A lot of fun rookies this year. Really exciting all-around rookie class. You know, obviously a few guys that really stand out, and well, obviously the biggest rookie standout is the guy that we'll be starting with today. Before I get into him, the usual housekeeping. If you enjoy the podcast, please rate and review. You can find all of my content on Rotoballer or over on my Patreon, which is toolshedfantasy.com. Going through all my positional stuff, positional prospect rankings, positional dynasty rankings, positional 2026 redraft rankings, a lot of player profiles, and, you know, some other fun stuff too. So still pumping out a ton of content, even though we're in the end of October. Obviously, dynasty content never ends, and it's never too early to start 2026 redraft content either. So a lot of good stuff on there, so feel free to check that out. Greatly appreciate all of the support. And make sure you check out all of the great content over on Rotoballer. With Rotoballer's Premium Pass, gain access to expert tools and advice from proven winners, including TeamSync, Lineup Assistant Tools, Free Agent Finder, Prop Picks, and the number one DFS Lineup Optimizer. The Premium Pass comes with a 100% money-back guarantee, and if you sign up now using the code SMASH, that's S-M-A-S-H, SMASH, you get 50% off. That's pretty damn good right there. All right, starting with big boy here, King Kurtz, Nicky Nukes, whatever you want to call him, Big Amish. He was phenomenal, Nick Kurtz, this year. 489 plate appearances, 290, 383, 619 slash line with 36 home runs, 90 runs scored, 86 RBI, 63 walks. I mean, what else could you want from Nick Kurtz in his rookie season? Took a couple of weeks to kind of get going, and then once he did, man, like, he was one of the top like three or four hitters in baseball. I mean, over the final, what was it, like 4 months of the season? I mean, it was him, it was Judge, it was Ohtani, it was Raleigh. It was like those were the big four. Like, that was a kind of the Mount Rushmore of hitters for the final two-thirds of the season, and one of those guys was a rookie, 22-year-old rookie. It was just drafted in 2024. So debuted under a year after being drafted fourth overall by the Athletics. And now you're talking about taking him, you know, first back end of the first round of 2026 drafts. You know, he's already, you know, neck and neck. And I have him ahead of Vlad Jr. in my dynasty rankings. It is very close. But now, you know, you have a toss-up almost between Vlad Jr. and Nick Kurtz for that number one dynasty first base discussion. You know, I think people thought that, you know, the upside was there for him to get up to, you know, at or near the top of this first base position. Don't think anybody thought it would happen this quickly and this emphatically, but hey, that's where we are. And, you know, look at all the metrics, the quality of contact for Nick Kurtz, just absolutely phenomenal. 92.7 mile an hour average exit velocity, 18.4% barrel rate, 51% hard hit rate, 39% sweet spot rate. He was one of the top players in all of baseball in bat speed, and he was actually second among all rookies in bat speed behind Jack Caglione, who obviously I'll get to in the outfield episode, but number two in bat speed for rookies. Chase rate, only 22.2%. That was 86th percentile. Walk rate, 12.9%. That was 90th percentile. You know, one area you can, I guess, nitpick, he did have a 30.9% strikeout rate, and contact rates were below average. You know, he had a 72.5% zone and a 64.5% overall contact rate. You know, oftentimes you look at that, and you're like, all right, that's not great. And no, there's no way to slice and dice it. Like, those are below average marks, you know. But sometimes when you make as much hard contact and hit the ball at ideal angles like he does, you know, it can work, right? Like, you might think, oh, that's, you know, he way overperformed in the average. He's going to be more of like a 240 guy. I don't think that's the case. I really don't. Do I think there's a higher chance of that 290 going down than up moving forward? Yes, I do think that is the case. Like, I don't think he's going to be 300 hitter or anything like that. But I don't think you're going to see, you know, a massive drop off. Like, you know, for example, and this is not, you know, direct, you know, comparison or anything like that. You know, Aaron Judge has never had league average contact rates. Like, he's the one where you look at contact rates and then the average, and you're like, hey, that does not match up. This year, Judge was 75.3% zone, 65.4% overall, so just barely better than Kurtz. But obviously, Aaron Judge led the majors in hitting 331 and hit 322 last year with similar contact rates because he hits the ball so freaking hard. You know, actually, last year, his contact rates were a little bit better, but still below average. So sometimes it doesn't always correlate, you know, contact rates to surface average when you hit the ball so hard and when you hit the ball at ideal angles like Nick Kurtz does. You know, like, you know, launch angle is 15.3 degrees. I mentioned the sweet spot rate was very high. He also had, you know, a 16% pull air rate, which actually is not elite, but it's solid. 62% air rate is above average. So hits the ball in the air. So even if he's more like 270, 275, something like that, I mean, the power's legit. So you could get 270 plus average with 40 plus home runs with 90 to 100 or more runs. So I think he's going to be good, not great in average, and then great in runs, home runs, RBI. Obviously, you're not going to get more than a rogue steal here and there. Great OBP as well. He's always been a high walk rate guy, dating back to his days at Wake Forest. So, I mean, he's legit. I think this performance we saw was not fluky in the slightest, and even if there's a slight batting average regression, I mean, I think there's a legit battle here between him and Vlad Jr. For number one dynasty first baseman. So, yeah, I think he's top 20 overall right now, maybe even top 15. That's kind of a big glob of my rankings, but he deserves to be up there. So, yeah, phenomenal year, one of the best rookie years we've seen, you know, at least in my lifetime, in this, you know, this 21st century of baseball here, one of the best rookie seasons in this 21st century. So Nick Kurtz, phenomenal, legit, worth all the rankings, all the love that he's getting. His teammate, though, had a really good year too, and was kind of the first one out of the Athletic rookies to burst onto the scene, to excel, to just really kind of make a name for himself. And then, you know, kind of slowed down a little bit, was dealing with an injury as well. So, you know, kind of cooled off the last, you know, month and a half, 2 months of the season. But still, 311, 355, 444 slash line for Wilson in 523 plate appearances, 13 home runs, 5 steals, 62 runs scored, and 63 RBI. You know, I don't think the Luis Arias comps are, I mean, they're not wrong, but they're not totally right either. I mean, I think it's easy to go Arias as a comp for all these like elite contact, but, you know, low power guys. And Wilson can fit that, you know, into that bucket, but not like fully. I think there's a little more power upside here for Wilson than there is with Arias. I mean, we know what Arias is. If you're getting 7-8 home runs out of him, that's a good outcome, right? That's probably the high end of what you can expect. And Wilson had 13 home runs this year. So, you know, at the same time, you know, I saw some like, oh, look, he does have power. I mean, not really. I mean, I wouldn't ever say he's, I don't think he's ever going to be flirting with 20 home runs. 13, 14, 15, that's probably the best case scenario high end. Unless he adds some muscle here and kind of bulks up, maybe you see him consistently be a mid-teens guy, but that's still probably high-end outcome. Just the quality of contact is not there, and really the batted ball angles aren't either. You know, look at, he only had 10 barrels the entire year, 450 balls in play, 10 barrels. It's a 2.2% barrel rate, 84.6 mile an hour average exit velocity. That was one of the worst marks in all of baseball. I think it was the bottom five in all of baseball, if I recall correctly. He had a 24.7% hard hit rate, 305 xWOBAcon. You know, both of those bottom 5% as well. So yeah, I don't think you can expect to, you know, anything more than what he gave you this year. And you know, he moves well at shortstop, fine. I mean, he's an athletic guy. That's not a speedy guy. So, well, I don't think he is any risk of moving off of shortstop anytime soon. You know, I don't think you're going to get a lot of stolen bases out of him either. I mean, he had a 39th percentile sprint speed. It's never been a big stolen base guy. Had 5 last year. Maybe you get 5 to 10. So I think best case scenario is like 10 to 15 home runs, 5 to 10 steals, which is better than Arise. It gives you, you know, Arise gives you a little bit more speed, I guess, but not as much power. But you get the elite average, right? You get the guy that's probably going to hit over 300. I mean, on the seasons he hits under 300, I think will be surprising. Like, I think whenever Arias doesn't hit like 320, I think it's a little surprising, like this year. But Wilson, 311 in his rookie year. Contact rates back that up. It's 92.5% zone, 90.4% overall. I mean, he is aggressive, but he just puts the bat on the ball. I mean, he has an 85.9% chase contact rate. So some hitters would kill for that rate in zone. That's what he's doing out of the zone with a, you know, in zone of 92.5%. Only strikes out 7.5% of the time. He doesn't walk much, only a 5% walk rate. So you won't have like an elite OBP, but just given how much he puts the bat on the ball, you know, you'll still have probably a 350, 360, 370 OBP, something like that. So it depends on if you like this type of profile or not. You know, if you're okay with having limited impact, but he should give you like 75, 80 runs, you know, 65, 70 RBI. He should be hitting near the top of that lineup, maybe even more than that, you know, over a full year, you know, hitting in front of, you know, Nick Kurtz and, you know, that up kind of the up and coming athletics lineup. That should be pretty good moving forward. If you Brent Rooker, I think he maybe 80 to 90 run type of guy. So he'll give you elite in one category, you know, decent amount of runs, you know, some RBIs, there won't be a zero there, and then a little bit of home run and steals. So it's just a matter of, do you like that profile? So a lot of people don't, some do. I mean, I don't think the, you know, price tag is ever going to be super high on him, but whenever I put out my shortstop, you know, dynasty rankings and tweet them out or whatever, people are like, oh, why do you not have Wilson higher? And, you know, I just explained why. I mean, I just don't think he's like that guy. Like, I'd rather have him. If I had Jacob Wilson as my middle infielder, I'm fine with that. Starting shortstop, not so much. So that's kind of where I'm at with Jacob Wilson. Now we shift over to another shortstop who probably couldn't be on the, like, these two profiles could not be farther apart. From Jacob Wilson over to Colson Montgomery of the Chicago White Sox, who hit the ground, not hit the ground running, hit the ground swinging. Like, he was swinging for the fence the moment he stepped into a major league baseball batter's box. 21 home runs and 284 plate appearances for the White Sox. You know, pretty good quality of contact metrics, 14.5% barrel rate, 89.4 mile an hour average EV. That doesn't really stand out, but 44.5% hard hit rate. You know, he's aggressive. He swings a lot, so it kind of he has some non-competitive swings that kind of drag down that average EV. But he had a 114.5 max EV, and the angles for Colson Montgomery, you know, definitely give that power a boost. 63.6% air rate, 27.2% pull air rate, 48.6% pull rate. That's what you like to see. Those are like pretty ideal numbers. I mean, you don't want to go like too extreme, but you know, I kind of personally like the, you know, air rate mid, you know, like that 64, 65, 66% range. Pull rate kind of like mid to upper 40s, not over 50. It gets a little too high, but mid to upper 40s is fine. And that pull air rate, you know, 25%+ is really damn good. So I kind of like those batted ball angles a lot for Montgomery. He had a 529 slug, had a 290 ISO, 474 X Wobicon, 523 X slug. So really everything backing up what he did on the surface. But, you know, got the anti-Wilson contact rates weren't great. Though the zone wasn't terrible. Zone was 80.1%. That's about 2.5% below league average, but not terrible. Chase rate a little high, but not bad at 30.5%. It's about 2% above league average, or worse than league average, I should say. And then the overall contact rate was, you know, about 6.5% worse than league average, chilling at 68.5%. K rate 29.2%, and then walk rate of 8.8%. So, you know, again, like if you combined Jacob Wilson and Colson Montgomery, actually, you know what? If you combine Wilson and Montgomery, you're probably somewhere in the Corey Seager range, probably. Just one of those like high average, good power, but none of the other one of these two are going to steal bags. So just like Seager doesn't give you much steals. But yeah, you combine Montgomery and Wilson, you probably get something like Corey Seager. But Montgomery probably never going to be a high source of average. He kind of started showing that hand that he wasn't going to be a big average guy in the minor leagues, like in the upper minors. So I think actually where he was this year, 239, you know, that 240 range, I think is a pretty fair expectation. You know, maybe he gets up in the 250 range, maybe dips down 230 range. So that 230 to 250 range, I think is a reasonable range, but I think he could be a 30 homer bat. So again, it kind of boils down to, do you like this profile? I mean, very different from Wilson, but do you like the, you know, 30 homer, but low average hitter that's only going to give you like a 310 to 320 or something like that OBP. Like walk rate's fine, but he's probably never going to be a high source of average. But could he be a you know, good source of power, solid amount of runs in RBI? So really like a three category guy where he stands out in one of those three. Never going to give you any speed and probably never going to give you a good average. But at the same time, I don't think the average will ever tank to the point where it's like 200. So, you know, I guess he's not like a total detriment to your team batting average. So, again, do you like this profile? Do you like the low average, high power guy? I know that's becoming, you know, more common these days. So, you know, it's not really a desirable or kind of sought after profile anymore. These guys are becoming more and more common in today's game. But, again, similar to Wilson, I kind of like Montgomery as a middle infielder. I'm not looking to, you know, have him as my starter, but middle infielder, if I ended up with Wilson or Montgomery as a middle infielder moving forward, you know, I'm okay with that. Both could be like top 150-ish dynasty guys, probably never top 100, but definitely have their value in their own way. So Montgomery, Jacob Wilson, two pretty solid guys. I'll get to Kyle Teal later. I should mention kind of like the little bit of the outline or the way I'm kind of formatting this. Kind of got four little categories, four little buckets here. Studs, buds, duds, and then rookie catchers, because there were so many rookie catchers. I'll get to those guys last. So I got one more stud here, and I'm only going with guys that have exceeded prospect eligibility. So like, I won't be talking about like Samuel Basayo in this episode. He's still a prospect, so he'll be a rookie next year. So he'll be talked about in next year's version of this podcast. So all these guys have exhausted prospect eligibility and will not be rookies next year. So yeah, no Basayo or anyone that had under 130 at bats. One more stud here, and that's Luke Kuechel of the Minnesota Twins. Didn't really play a lot, only 207 plate appearances, but I think he definitely could fit into that stud category with how productive he was. In those 207 plate appearances, 302, 382, 445 slash line, four home runs, and 14 steals. Kiesel basically performed kind of like what we thought he could be. I mean, what he showed coming up through as a prospect was a guy that, you know, gets on base, a guy that can hit for average, makes a lot of contact, doesn't chase a lot, doesn't strike out a lot, and can run. I mean, he had a lot of steals in the minor leagues, 14 and 207 plate appearances. I won't say he's a, I don't know if I use burn, he's a plus runner. I won't say he's like 70 grade, 80 grade, anything like that, but he's a plus runner. You know, I think 30 plus steals is a realistic expectation for him over a full season. Maybe even some 40 steal years. I know he was on pace for like, 43, 44 this year. So I think you can expect 30 plus, and I think you can expect a high average and a good OBP. He only struck out 14% of the time with the Twins, 9.2% walk rate, and above average contact rates, 86.7% in zone, 18.5% whiff rate, so 81%, 81.5% overall contact rate, and an 20% chase rate. I don't know why I said 80. 20% chase rate. So again, not a guy that chases a lot, just puts the bat on the ball and squares up a lot too. Like his squared up rate was 35%. That was in the top 5% of hitters. Sweet spot rate, 38.3%. That was in like the top 15 or so percent of hitters. Not really enough, play appearances to qualify for a lot of these, but definitely ranked near the top of the leaderboard in a lot of those categories, including XBA. But at the same time, didn't really impact the ball a lot. It's not, Wilson levels of quality of contact. It's a tick above that. But it was a 5.2% barrel rate, 86.2 mile an hour average EV, and a 31.2% hard hit rate. I do think Kiesel is like that 15-ish homer guy, maybe a little bit less, maybe a little bit more, but somewhere in the mid-teens, I think, is kind of like the benchmark of what you can expect from him year to year. But if that comes with 30-plus steals, probably a good amount of runs scored, given probably hitting near the top of the lineup with how much he gets on base. So if you're looking at a good average, good OBP, solid amount of runs scored, 15, 30-plus type of guy, I think that's, at this position, second base, that's top five. This position is not great right now. It's really in flux right now. And some, the top guys, like, can Terang, keep it up? How long can Ketel Marte stay elite? Can Jazz Chisholm stay healthy? So even the top guys have some question marks, in one way or another. So Kiesel, I think, could absolutely, kind of solidify himself as a top five option moving forward, and probably already is in that range right now. So, yeah, Luke Kiesel, I like a good bit. I think he could be a fun fantasy player moving forward. So now let's go over to the Buds. There's only really two that fit in this range, maybe a few more that, that are catchers, but again, I wanted to keep them separate because there are so many of them. So the two Buds are Caleb Durbin of Milwaukee and Matt Shaw of the Cubs. I'll start with Matt Shaw. I mean, he was borderline dud because you look at the slash line, 226, 295, 394. Not great. There's no way around it. The 689 OPS is not great. But at the same time, I didn't feel fully, it didn't feel fully right putting a guy that was on like right around a 2025 pace as a total dud. Again, he's bordering on the stud dud line, but, 13 home runs, 17 steals, and 437 plate appearances, 57 runs scored. He was really hot and cold this year. And there are some good, some bad. Some of the good were he was running, 17 steals, 90th percentile sprint speed there. So that's good. It was only caught five times. So he was efficient. Overall contact rate was actually pretty good. Like, I think the contact rates were better than the average would indicate. As you're looking at it, 77.5% overall and an 83.4% zone contact rate. Both of those are above league average. Didn't really struggle against any pitch type. 82% contact rate on fastballs, about 73% on off speed, 70% on breaking. So if your worst, contact rate on those three pitch types is 70%, that's pretty decent. Hit four home runs against fastballs, three against breaking, six against off-speed. So really didn't have any one pitch set that he really, really struggled with. So that's good to see. But overall, the really limited Shaw. You know, wasn't the contact. Again, that was solid. The approach was fine. He was actually right in the vicinity of league average, both with walk and strikeout rate. But the quality of contact just wasn't there. It was a 6.9% barrel rate, 84.9 mile an hour average EV, which was one of the lowest marks in all of baseball. His max EV was only 109.2, so didn't even hit 110 on that, and a 29.4% hard hit rate. So, you know, Shaw never profiled as a big power guy, but I thought he'd be a guy that would, like, you know, flirt with 20 home runs annually. And yeah, he still had 13 home runs this year because he had a 21.8% pull air rate, 40.9% pull rate, 60.5% air rate. So that helps. As those are all better than league average by, you know, around 3, 4, 5% on each of those. So that definitely helped. You know, decent home ballpark also kind of helps him. But at the same time, you know, actually, I mean, I got to look at that. Wrigley Field not good on... Yeah, see, Wrigley Field is actually not good on lefties, even though most of his home runs were pulled. Actually, all of them technically were pulled. 11 to left, 2 to left center. But yeah, actually, I'm mistaken. I forgot that Wrigley Field actually is pretty deep out down the left field line, 355 down the left field line. But that doesn't really get deep again until center field. Like, left center is 368. That's not terrible. But, you know, he did have the good batted ball angles, which helped, but you need to see more impact from Shaw. I mean, I think there's more juice in the tank, but so I still think he could be that 15, 18 homer guy. Maybe he's not going to be 20 plus. Like, I thought you'd see some low 20s seasons out of him at some point. Maybe that's not the case, but I still think there's a chance for like 15 to 18 home runs, you know, 20 plus steals. And I think you can see that average tick up as well. So, not a starter, you know, for you, but maybe Shaw can kind of grow into being a decent, like, mid-level corner infielder. You know, there's third base position's gotten deeper again. Corner infield in general has gotten deeper. You know, first base is getting deep again. So is third. And all those positions really seem to fluctuate a lot year to year. So that definitely could change, you know, as soon as next year or year after. But I think Shaw still has that potential to be a mid-tier kind of corner infielder for fantasy teams. Just, I don't think he's... I thought he could be a back-end starting caliber guy. Don't think that's the case anymore. But still 23, like, I'm not writing him off by any means, but I need to see more impact with the bat from Matt Shaw. Let's go over to Caleb Durbin now, speaking of kind of lack of impact. You know, Caleb Durbin actually, like, sneaky had a decent year. 11 home runs, 18 steals, and 506 plate appearances, 256, 334, 387 slash line. So around, you know, close to a 15, 23, 24 pace, you know, didn't strike out much. You know, kind of had that high contact, low K profile, only a 9.9% strikeout rate. Contact rates were 91.5% in zone, 87% overall. You know, didn't chase a lot either. Put the bat on the ball even outside the zone, had a 74.5%, you know, chase contact rate, but just another guy that just does not impact the ball much at all. And that's kind of what we expected from Caleb Durbin. You know, only a 4% barrel rate, 85.2 mile an hour average EV, 27% hard hit rate, you know, but decent runner, not a burner. Now, he had a lot of steals in the minor leagues and out in the AFL, but, you know, only a 70th percentile sprint. So he's an above average runner, but not a burner. But if you can get double-digit home runs out of him and, you know, 20, 25 steals, something like that, I think you can get a higher average than he showed this year, like maybe 270, 280, maybe even more than that. But don't think you're going to get much more than like a 10, 20 guy or a little bit more in each of those departments, and doesn't walk that much, so probably won't have a huge OBP. Though I believe he gets hit a lot, if I recall correctly. Yes, he does. There you go. So that definitely helps, but it's just hard to really rely on, you know, hit by pitch to boost your OBP. So I'm always a little leery about that, but he did have 24, which actually led the National League. Wow, that's a lot. But you know, good OBP guy, good, should be a good average guy. Just not a lot of juice in the power speed department, but definitely has some. So he has some value. Just not really an overly exciting guy, but there is some value with rostering a Caleb Durbin moving forward.
Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
All right, over to the duds now. I got, what I got? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 duds here. I'll try to go a little bit quicker through these guys, but I only have 7 duds. I miscounted. So 7 guys here, starting with Chase Meidroth of the Chicago White Sox. I mean, he's kind of a similar Caleb Durbin in a way with less speed. Kind of similar power, just doesn't really barrel up the ball a lot. He did have a higher average EV and hard hit rate than Durbin did, but 88.2 mile an hour average EV, 36% hard hit rate, only 6 barrels in the year for a 1.6% barrel rate. Another elite contact guy, 91% in zone, 87% overall, even at a 76.5% chase contact rate, only a 22.5%. chase rate overall, 14% strikeout rate, 9% walk rate, just not a guy that's going to give you really any source of power. I mean, 5 to 10 home runs, pretty much what you can expect from him. And, you know, maybe, I mean, I don't think more than that 14 range, maybe he's mid-teens in steals, but I would not expect him to be like 20-plus or anything like that. He's never shown that type of speed to me. So it's really limited in what he can give you, and Durbin is in a way too. So long term, I don't think the overall value of Durbin and Chase Meidroth is like terribly far apart. But I just don't see really any impact here with Meidroth. Like the bat speed is low; it's one of the lowest bat speeds in all of baseball. Barrel rate was only. I think there's only a few people lower than him in barrel rate. You know, the X slug was only 333. You know, the surface slug was only 320. So I think this is kind of what Meidroth is. I mean, he's fine to kind of target in deeper leagues. That's fine. You know, the walk rate's solid, give you a little bit extra OBP, but just a limited profile overall. So I got like Durbin, Meidroth, those guys. Unless I get them for free. They're not guys I remember like actively seeking out like to add or to trade for it, anything like that. So Meidroth, I think this is kind of what you're getting with him, just a low-end fantasy guy, more of like a deep league guy. Kobe Mayo. Man, he's one. It's like Kobe Mayo and Jordan Lawler. They're like the two guys, the two former top. Actually, Lawler technically still is a prospect, but two guys that were like elite prospects a year or two ago that haven't really had a chance to play regularly for the most part. Mayo has a bit more than Lawler and just never really had, you know, extended showing of good success. I mean, Mayo gave us a little bit of a glimpse here at some point this season, but you know, overall in 290 full plate appearances this year with Baltimore, 217, 299, 388 slash line, 11 home runs, added 3 steals. Quality of contact has kind of been all over the place with Mayo. It's a 10.1% barrel rate, which is above average, but below average, 87.3 mile an hour average exit velocity and a 36% hard hit rate. It's not kind of what you thought you'd get from Mayo. You thought it'd be a bit more impact than that. 28.5% strikeout rate, 9.2% walk rate. does have the batted ball angles you look for. Like, he is like almost the poster child for what I like to see. Like I mentioned earlier, those kind of the ranges in air pull and pull air rates, he's right in them. 64.2% air rate, 46.4% pull rate, and a 26.8% pull air rate. Beautiful. Like, chef's kiss. Mwah. Gotta love that from Coby Mayo. I mean, obviously, a good park here for him. Good lineup. I know everything and anything went wrong with Baltimore this year, but I do think it's going to be a good lineup moving forward. Obviously, still plenty of young talent there. Yeah, I think you're going to get a look here from Mayo this year. I think he'll get you starting to play more regularly down the stretch. I think you see that continue in the 2026. I'm going back in time, apparently. So I still think there's a chance that Mayo's a corner infield viable fantasy bat. More in the kind of like 240 to 250, 25 to 30 home run mold. Because the contact rates were below average, but not terrible. 80% in zone, 70% overall. Doesn't chase too much. So some pretty okay numbers there. Did struggle against breaking balls. That was really his big weakness. 167 batting average against, 278 slug. Only an 81.8 mile an hour average EV with a 44% whiff rate. Like, he mashes fastballs, off speed. He's okay. I mean, he had good batting average and slug against off speed, but only 83 mile an hour average EV with a 41.5% whiff rate against them. So I think the, you know, that surface batting average and slug, you know, obviously were a little bit inflated, but mashes fastballs. So I think 240, 25 to 30 home runs, I think is a fair, you know, still a fair expectation for Coby Mayo. Again, kind of similar to what I said about Matt Shaw. Yeah, at one point, I thought they could be like a starting caliber guy at their respective position. You know, Mayo now obviously more of a first baseman. But now I do not believe that's the case. But I still think there's a path to Mayo and Shaw being like a serviceable mid-range corner infield type. We'll see. But Mayo is going to have – it's not a make-or-break year from Mayo, but like a show-me year. Like, show me that you still can be, you know, even somewhat close to what we thought you could be, even if it's not what we exactly what we thought for Mayo. Like, show me you can be a viable fantasy bat for more than like a week or two in 2026. We'll keep it right in the American League East. Go to the Red Sox with Christian Campbell. I'm not doing Meyer in this episode because Meyer is technically, I mean, depending if you use service time, he's still, like, I still use service time in my rankings because it's just so hard to really keep track of all that. So I just use the 130 and 50 threshold. So Meyer is still a prospect in my rankings, so we'll not be discussing him here. And obviously Roman Anthony will be in the outfield episode coming up next week. But Christian Campbell started off good and then not so good. Overall, 263 plate appearances, 223, 319, 345 slash line, 6 home runs, and 2 steals. So, all right, let's kind of like break it down here because obviously Campbell went from being, you know, a fourth-round pick with some upside in 2023 to one of the most elite prospects in the game in 2024, entering 2025 after that phenomenal run he had in Boston's minor league system, getting up to AAA. So there was a question. There was a legit, like, oh, Anthony or Campbell, like the battle of the Red Sox prospects. And obviously we saw how that went. In 2025, one went one way, one went the other way. But I'm very much buy low. I think one of the biggest buy low guys in dynasty leagues right now is Christian Campbell. I mean, the skills, like, I don't think 2024 was a fluke. I saw Campbell in AA. Former, co-host of this podcast, Chris Clegg, saw him down in High A. Like, a lot of knowledgeable people saw him. Like, I don't think this, what we saw in 2024 was a fluke. I don't think what we saw in April of 2025 was a fluke. When you look at, in March, he went 6 for 16 with a home run, 2 doubles. April, he slashed 287, 388, 460. So he had 4 home runs, 8 doubles, 18 runs scored, 12 RBI, 19 runs, 32 Ks, pair of steals through the end of April. Right near the end of April, had a, what was it? It was a, hand or a wrist? I think it was, I'm trying to look it up here. Hand or a wrist injury that cost him a couple games. Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was the rib issue. Right in the beginning of May, had that rib issue. And missed a few games, did not go in the IL, but this wasn't the same after that. Like, you saw quality of contact tank. I mean, the rib, you know, anybody that's ever played baseball, I mean, it's in your day-to-day life. How many of us have, like, hurt a rib, whether you crack it or you just have a sore rib? That sucks. In our day-to-day life, doing what we do, you know, what everyone's job is out there, but, you know, just moving around your day-to-day life, that could suck. Imagine trying to be a professional baseball player with the torque that goes into swinging. And anybody that played baseball knows that. I mean, I played up through high school. So, that just can't be easy. So, who knows, you know, if he was still kind of feeling the effects of that or if it was a mental thing. Not sure. But everything went south for Christian Campbell after that. And then he got demoted to AAA Worcester. And never really got that shot again. I mean, in May, 134, 184, 171 slash line. I mean, obviously that's terrible. June was 205, 340, 318. Then he got sent down and never came back up. I'm still very much a believer in Campbell, as I said. I think he can still be a high-impact player. I still believe in all the skills. I just don't know, like, will he get a shot again to start 2026? I don't think the Red Sox have a good idea of if they do, they're not really showing their hand. Like, where is Campbell going to be, like, on the diamond? I don't think this, from what I've seen and heard, I don't think they are totally comfortable with him at second base. And, you know, I don't think the first base route. So is it going to be some second base with some outfield mixed in? He played a little bit of outfield this year too. So I don't know. It's hard to say what that eligibility will look like from Campbell, but I think just given how much the perceived value is tanked because of that performance and people just wondering and questioning, is he legit? Was he a fluke? Was it just a fluky, you know, great minor league season? We've seen those before. And yes, that is a legit question to ask. I just don't think it was a fluke from Campbell. And I'm not saying that because I'm a Red Sox fan, but I'm saying it as someone that's seen Campbell and still believes in the talent. I'd say this if he was a Yankee too. You know, Campbell is still a very talented player. So I would be looking to buy low. Maybe he's not going to be a stud, but can he still be a top 100 dynasty guy? Yes, I think that path is still there. So I would be looking to buy low on Christian Campbell this offseason without question. All right, over to Seattle now. We get some West Coast guys here. Cole Young with Seattle, Dalton Rushing with the Dodgers, Christian Moore with the Angels. Then we'll finish the dud section back on the East Coast with Brady House. We'll start with Cole Young, 257 plate appearances, 211, 302, 305 slash line, 4 home runs, 1 steal. So with Young, he, you know, he's a guy that's always put the bat on the ball. It wasn't elite contact in the major leagues, but above average overall contact rate of 75.4%. Zone was a tick below average, but not bad at 79.5%. Better than league average chase rates. You know, approach was good, 11% walk, 18% K. That's good. But just kind of like a lot of the other guys I've talked about in this episode, like, you know, the Durbins and the Mydroths and all them, it's not a lot of impact from Cole Young. I mean, it's not, you know, as he's not a zero in the power department, but I would be surprised if he's ever more than like 12, 13, 14 home runs. I think that's kind of like top end of what you can expect, like in the vicinity of 10, give or take. And I don't think you're going to get more than a handful of steals out of him. Like, that's kind of why I never ranked him high as a prospect and really dropped him down my rankings in 2025. I think where he took the biggest hit for me was, yeah, when I was going through my Seattle prospects last offseason. Or maybe it was my shortstop prospect. I forget. One of my prospect rankings last offseason, either my positional or my team prospect rankings, where I was just like really digging into the profile, and I was like, man, I don't like this for fantasy much at all. I just don't think there's a lot of impact there. So you know, as a middle infielder, you know, I just don't see him even getting to the range of being, you know, even a low end middle infielder for fantasy purposes. I mean, even at second base, where it's really, like I said earlier, just a position in flux, I don't see enough impact. I don't see enough speed. I don't see enough power. I do think the average and OBP will tick up moving forward, but there's not a lot of, you know, things in the profile that makes me want to go out and target Cole Young. So yeah, I don't know if I want to say I'm out on Young. I've never been in on Young, but just not interested whatsoever in Cole Young. As for Christian Moore, I mean, Christian Moore is interesting because he's shown good power. He's a good athlete, you know, 70th percentile sprint speed. You know, he had, you know, solid quality of contact right around league average in the majors, but he's shown, you know, above average power. So like, you think like, all right, this guy could be like a 20, 25 home run guy, you know, maybe like 10 to 15 steals, something like that. But a lot of issues in just making contact and keeping that K rate in check. 72% zone contact and 63.1% overall contact with a 33.7% strikeout rate with the Angels. And this was something I kind of mentioned last year. I mean, he came out gangbusters with all the home runs after the draft, but you know, the contact rates weren't good, you know? So this kind of equated to a 198, 284, 370 slash line in 184 plate appearances for the Angels. I'm sure he'll get another chance at some point. I mean, the Angels don't really got a lot going for them right now. So I think you see another chance for Christian Moore in 2026. But is he just another Zach Geloff type, you know, where he'll give you some, maybe give you some fun power speed numbers, but low average and just more frustrating than anything to roster, just given the inconsistencies with him. And, you know, there'll be probably more valleys than peaks with Moore. So I don't know. He's fun, and he'll probably have some stretches where you're like, oh, hey, maybe this is the start of something for Christian Moore. But, you know, is he just going to be it's not a direct comp, like an infield Joe Adele, where it takes him a long time to figure it out, and maybe Moore never does. You know, Joe Adele kind of did this year and a little bit last year, but there's no guarantee that Moore will kind of follow that similar path. But he's a fun, but, you know, more risky than fun guy. So another one I'm not really intrigued by. But Dalton Rushing, I'm still a little bit intrigued by Dalton Rushing. I know this year, I mean, he had, what was the key rate? 28.5%. So that's Brady House, wrong page. This was higher than that. Yeah, 37.5%. There we go. 37.5% strikeout rate for Rushing in 155 plate appearances. He was one because he played so sporadically. Like, he graduated from prospect eligibility on service time like a month and a half before he graduated on at bats. I think that's like maybe the largest, you know, differential between service time graduation and at bat graduation that I can remember seeing. But just because he was only playing like once or twice a week behind Will Smith. I mean, you saw Rushing get some look in minor leagues at first in the outfield. It hasn't really, you know, come to fruition in the major leagues. Obviously, the Dodgers are just loaded everywhere, so it doesn't matter. I mean, obviously, he's not going to upseat Freddie Freeman. You know, this is not really a path for Rushing to get into regular playing time. So, you know, that's why I said, like, I'd love to see him and Sheehan get traded this offseason just so I can shore up everyday, like, full-time roles. So I'm still intrigued by Rushing. I mean, there's still some good in the profile. Look at the quality of contact. 14% barrel rate, 91-mile-an-hour average EV, 45.5% hard hit rate. You know, contact rates were bad, but they've been better in the minor leagues. Chase rate, 19.6%. You know, zone contact was 73% overall, but 65%. Those are not good. Those are bad. But again, he showed better in the minor leagues. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if those ticked up. And he needs regular playing time. He hits the ball at ideal angles. 65% air rate, 52% pull rate, 29% pull air rate. Like, there's still some good in the profile, but there's just a lot of swing and miss. Way too much swing and miss and not enough putting the bat on the ball. But, you know, does regular playing time kind of help him get into a rhythm? It's kind of hard to get into a rhythm when you're playing once, twice a week at most. Like, he was playing a backup catcher role And yeah, I obviously understand why, you know, with Will Smith being there and you can't put him at first base because, oh, you got a future Hall of Famer and Freddie Freeman there. Oh, let's put him at DH. Nope, you got the greatest player in the history of the world, Ohtani at DH. So there's no spot for him. So obviously you're not going to put him over one of those guys unless there's an injury. But I don't know. I'm still a rushing believer. I'm far from out on Dalton rushing. So I think at this point, just how low the cost is, how low the perceived value is, I think he's a pretty good buy low right now. Just be patient if you do get him because it might be similar frustrations in 2026. But the talent is still there. I'm still intrigued by the talent. Brady House, not so much. I mean, House hits the ball hard. 46% hard hit rate, 89.8 mile an hour average EV, but doesn't barrel up the ball. Only a 4.3% barrel rate. Only a 53.5% air rate, 32% pull rate, 10.5% pull air rate. Those are not ideal numbers. I mean, the air rate is below average, not terrible, but below average. Pull rate, 5% below league average. Pull air rate, 6% below league average. For a guy that's a good but not great power bat with bad batted ball angles, I mean, that's why he had only four home runs in 274 plate appearances with a 234, 252, 322 slash line. That's the other thing. You didn't see much of a difference between the average and OBP right there because House doesn't walk a lot. 2.9% walk rate, 28.5% strikeout rate. Contact skills also below average, 77% zone, 69% overall. I mean, those aren't terrible, but they are below average. 37% chase rate. I mean, that's basically, it's easy to kind of summarize House. He's an aggressive guy, below average contact skills, above average power, but bad batted ball angles. He can run a little bit. Maybe he's a 5 to 10 steal guy long term. And I think there's a chance he's a 20 homer guy. Like 2010 is there, like that upside is there, but I don't think he's ever gonna hit for a high average more than like 250. I don't think he's ever gonna give you an OBP north of 300. And you know, he needs to elevate and pull more. So there's a lot of work to be done. And I wouldn't say I'm fully 2 feet out the door on House. I'm not looking to acquire him either, but he's 22. Look, I'm not writing him off. I'll say that. I'm not looking to get him, but I'm not writing him off either. Just not super intrigued by Brady House moving forward in Dynasty Leagues, though. All right, let's close out the show with a six-pack of catchers, starting with the guy that probably wins the National League Rookie of the Year. I think he's at least the front-runner ahead of Cade Horton and Isaac Collins. That's Drake Baldwin. I mean, this is a guy that has been a steady rankings riser for the last couple of years now through prospect rankings. I've had a chance to see live, was super impressed by, and he just continues to do his thing. Like, he came as advertised this year, kind of was splitting time, but got more and more consistent reps as the season wore on, and we just can't trust Murphy to stay healthy anyway. So Drake Baldwin, I think, is legit top five catcher moving forward. In 446 plate appearances, 274, 341, 469 slash line, 19 home runs. He's just a really good hitter. I mean, that's just the easiest way to break down Baldwin is he's a really good hitter. 11% barrel rate, 91.7 mile an hour average EV, hard hit rate just under 50%. Contact skills good as well, 86% in zone, 80.5% overall. Only struck out 15.2% of the time, 8.5% walk rate. The expected metrics back up what he did. They're even better. 282 XBA, 493 X slug, 395 X Wobicon. You know, again, he doesn't whiff a lot, doesn't strike out a lot. Bat speed was in the top 10% of hitters this year. Average EV and hard hit rate were in the top 15%. All of his expected metrics were top 15 to 20%. Everything is legit with Drake Baldwin. I mean, he was a little bit of an older prospect. He's 24 this year, but he is as legit as they come. Not going to give you any speed, but this is going to be a really good hitter for a really long time. Guy that can give you a good average, get on base at a decent clip, like a 270 plus hitter, 350-ish OBP, you know, 20 to 25 home runs. Just mark it down, take it to the bank. Maybe he's not the flashiest guy, and there's some guys that have more upside than Baldwin. But I think he's, out of all the rookie catchers this year, I think Baldwin offers the best blend of ceiling and floor. And I say that including Sammy Basayo, to the point where I've been questioning my ranking of having Basayo ahead of Baldwin in dynasty rankings. That's no slight against Basayo at all. I mean, obviously he has the makings of a potential middle of the order stud, but is the blend of ceiling and floor better for Baldwin to the point where I would trust having Baldwin more? I don't know. That's just something I got to think about more as the offseason wears on. But I mean, I don't think there's a big gap between them, regardless of if who you have in front. So I think Baldwin is absolutely legit top five catcher moving forward. Augustin Ramirez, we'll keep it right there in the National League East with the Marlins here. You know, he's one that actually I think has more upside because he runs. You know, he's far from a burner. He's not even an above average runner, but he has always shown the willingness to run, always stolen bags at every level he's been at, and had 16 steals this year and 585 plate appearances with 21 home runs, 72 runs scored, a 231, 287, 413 slash line. I think he was the first rookie catcher since, who was it? I'm blanking, but you know, you don't see a 21-16 rookie season from a catcher very often. So that's definitely fun. The quality of contact is there. Like I saw Ramirez back, you know, Yankee system, double A, kind of back when he was like starting to break out that year. It would have been, what, 2023? Yeah, he got the double A, I think, mid-2023. And this hit the ground running, was one of the best hitters in the league right off the bat. And I think he's a 25-homer bat. Like 25-15, I think, is reasonable expectation for Ramirez. He almost did that this year. I wouldn't expect much more than what he gave you for speed this year in terms of stolen bases, but there's more power upside in the tank. I mean, the quality of contact, 11% barrel, 47% hard hit rate, 91-mile-an-hour average EV, 117 max EV. So quality of contact is there. Also has a 18.5% pull air rate, although the overall air rate was a bit low. But what you'd expect from a guy that, what was the average? 231. The contact rates are better than what you'd expect. 86.3% zone, 25.5% whiff rate. You know, did chase a little bit, 32% whiff rate, but those are above average contact rates. Doesn't really walk a lot. He's always been an aggressive guy, but K rate better than league average by about 3%, 19.3%. So maybe he's not ever more than like a low 300s OBP guy, but I do believe the average ticks up. I think it's going to tick up in a big way. So 260, 25-15, that's reasonable for Ramirez. So that's why, you know, I said maybe he's not as safe as Baldwin, but I do think, you know, higher upside, higher ceiling for Ramirez. So if you can get him on a little bit of a discount just because that average and OBP aren't great, I think there's a potential for him being a top five, or at least top five or close to it, dynasty catcher moving forward. I love Ramirez. The kid just absolutely pummels the ball. Now, a few more of the unheralded rookie catchers. Dylan Dingler, you know, he was one of the top rookies in F4. I mean, I know that's not a fantasy stat, but you know, this shows like he doesn't get talked about at all because there are so many good rookie catchers this year that were so much more exciting, more highly touted as prospects. So he doesn't really get a lot of love. But 278, 327, 425 slash line, 13 home runs and 469 plate appearances. You know, on top of already being one of the best defensive catchers in all of baseball in terms of, you know, blocking, framing, everything, and you know, throwing out runners, pop time, all that. You know, he's already shown his worth there. You know, decent hitter too. I mean, that kind of goes unheralded and untalked about. He had a 301 XBA, you know, higher in the 487 X slug, so higher, considerably higher than the surface stats. 9% barrel rate, 90 mile an hour average EV, 45.7% hard hit rate. Doesn't walk a lot, you know, sub 5% walk rate in both of his major league seasons so far. The last year was only 87 plate appearances, but not a big walk rate guy, but kept the K rate in check at 23.5%, 85.5% zone contact rate, 75% overall. So, you know, league average or a tick above league average in both zone and overall contact rates. I'm not saying he's ever going to be a, you know, top 12 catcher, but, you know, if you play in a two catcher format or just a deeper format where it makes sense to roster a backup catcher, I think he's great in both of those. As a C2 or a backup in a deeper league, I think Dingler is just like the ideal guy that won't cost a lot, but gives you some solid serviceable production and a high-end floor or a solid floor, I should say, to go off of. So Dingler, very decent player here. Not a lot of love there. Keep it in the AL Central for these next two, both on the White Sox, Kyle Teal and Edgar Cairo. Teal, 273, 375, 411, 8 home runs, 3 steals, and 297 plate appearances. Cairo, 268, 333, 356, 5 home runs, and 403 plate appearances. Now, Teal, more highly touted. Obviously, he was one of the big pieces going back to the White Sox in that Garrett Crochet trade. He was considered one of the top catching prospects in all of baseball before debuting. And, you know, had a pretty solid year. You know, it's funny. It's actually his defensive metrics weren't great, which is kind of surprising. But at the same time, he, you know, I think he was admirable at the plate. Maybe even exceeded expectations a little bit. You know, 375 OBP, great. 12.5% walk rate. Got to love that. You know, contact skills were not terrible, but below average, both in zone and overall. But a better than league average chase rate. K rate a little bit higher, but not terrible at 26%. And quality of contact was good. 9.6% barrel rate, 38% hard hit rate, max EV of about 114, you know, solid launch angle, elite sweet spot rate at 48%. So the angles, even though the power was good but not great, batted ball angles definitely helped out. 20.8% pull air rate, 40.5% pull rate, and a 63% air rate. So those are solid marks there. Again, another guy like Dingler, though I value Teal higher than Dingler. I think they kind of fall into that same range of don't want him as my starter, but would be fine with him as my C2 in those formats or as a backup in deeper dynasty leagues. So Kyle Teal, I think he's going to have a long career, a long, decent, not great career. So not a high-impact guy, but it's a steady fantasy guy for sure. Cairo, on the other hand, I don't know. I've always been like so up and down on Cairo. Like you look at some of the metrics here, you know, above average hard hit rate and average EV, and those are both better than Teal's, but only a 3.7% barrel rate because he just did not. Like he's out of all the people I've talked about in this episode, and that's been what, 15, 18 guys, whatever. He has the worst batted ball angles out of any player I've talked about in this episode. Only a 50.7% air rate, which is well below league average. 27.7% pull rate, well below league average. He goes opposite field a lot. And only a 7.8% pull air rate, which is under half of the league average. League average is around 16.5%. He was under 8%. So just he puts the bat on the ball, though. Like, he puts the bat on the ball. You know, he had overall contact rate of 79%. You know, he had plenty of contact against all three pitch types, 78% or better contact rate on all three pitch types. Just limited by hitting the ball into the ground. Not a guy that's going to run at all. He's slow. Only a fifth percentile sprint speed. So you need him to kind of get into the, you know, double-digit home run range. Can he? Maybe. I mean, if he elevates a little bit more consistently, that's easier said than done. But there's upside for more power. I mean, obviously, then there's an elite chase rate, only 19% there. So there's still some good in the profile, but I just don't see him ever getting above C2 status for fantasy purposes. And I value him below both Dingler and Kyle Teal. Moving forward, And we'll close it out with one more catcher here in Carlos Narvaez. And who saw this coming? I mean, I don't think anybody saw this coming. And a little bit of an up and down year, but overall, 241, 306, 419 slash line, 446 plate appearances, 15 home runs. Really good defensive catcher, too. You know, one of the best defensive catchers in all of baseball. And he's the guy for Boston moving forward. I mean, they obviously Kyle Teal's out of the picture now. No other real threats to Narvaez's kind of role as the starting catcher moving forward. You know, maybe they address it, that spot, in future drafts or, you know, free agency, whatever. But for now, Narvaez is the dude, and I think he's another guy that falls into that C2 range. You know, 44.5% hard hit rate, 9% barrel rate, 91.1 mile an hour average EV, so nice, solid, above average quality of contact metrics. Contact rates were a little below league average, both in zone and overall, but not bad by any means. 80.5% zone with a 72.5% overall contact rate. He actually did struggle against fastballs, only a 212 batting average against with 381 slug, but hit breaking balls well, hit off-speed well, and when he did make contact on fastballs, he hit the ball hard. He had 92-mile-an-hour average EV on fastballs, but just wasn't really putting the bat on the ball as much as you'd like to see on fastballs. But hey, if you can get like a 250, you know, average 15 to 20 home runs out of him, that's, again, another solid C2 guy, you know, high floor because of the defense. That'll keep him in the lineup more often than not, even when he is struggling, which we saw this year when he was struggling at the plate in like August or so. You know, he was still in that lineup regularly because of how much value he brings to the Red Sox in real life. Just another guy that I don't see ever rising above C2 status. But again, you play in those two catcher formats or deeper leagues where you can roster a backup. Narvaez is another fine option there, right in that Teal Dingler tier for sure. All right, that was a lot of names here, but a lot of intriguing rookies. And again, that's why I had to break this up into three episodes. Next episode will be outfielders and then pitching after that. So make sure you check those out. Check out the Patreon, a lot of good stuff up there. Check out Rotoballer. Great stuff on Rotoballer as always. And I will be back with you again next time. But until then, everyone take care.